My next predictor is a very distinguished thinker and doer inside the federal government. Dr. Charles Hertzfeld is a former director of the Advanced Research Projects Agency, ARPA, where the ARPANET was started under his direction. He's also served as vice president for research and technology at ITT and director of defense research and engineering at the Department of Defense, a longtime record of service in government and outside of government. And I talked to Dr. Hertzfeld this morning, about his predictions, not just for 2011, but also for beyond. I'd like to know what you think people in government will be thinking about and working on and talking about in 2011, or what people will be thinking about, trends that you see long term that maybe will have the groundwork laid in 2011.
I think the biggest problem by far is to think about the economic future of this country and of the world as a whole. We have not figured out how to get stable growth in a rapidly changing world. In my lifetime, the population of the world has tripled from 2 plus billion to 6 billion. The life expectancy of many, many people has almost doubled, and we now have an aging population. The war, World War II, is actually not hurt in the long run, but we have a strange situation now where the economically advanced countries like Europe and the U.S. have problems paying their bills, and where China and India, who started way back in terms of economic status, are catching up. China is now the world's number two economy, and very likely in 25 years will be on par with the U.S. That is a stupendous change if you look at the history. So that's one. The other is the problem of terrorism and general lack of people's interest in supporting organizational structures that makes society function. A lot of people think that a mob in the street can run a country. Well, they can't, because they don't know enough about what needs to be done. And now, these are very deep philosophical questions, but they're challenges for all governments who are awake, and ours surely is. And it's not clear to many professionals exactly what to do. And I think I'm quite confident that these two questions will absorb 80% of all government thinking in the U.S. and elsewhere.
Are we doing enough to address the root causes of terrorism? And are we thinking about addressing those root causes the right way? Or are we spending maybe, do you think, too much time addressing the symptoms and not addressing the actual causes?
That's a very good question, and I wish somebody knew the answer. I'm afraid nobody really does. The root causes that you hear about are poverty and political discrimination and such. However, most of the people who were involved in the 9/11 attacks were highly educated. Many came from wealthy families and so on. So there's something else going on. That's point one I want to make. The other point I want to make is that in our attempt to protect everyone from all conceivable dangers, we have gone way overboard, I believe. I do a lot of traveling on airplanes still, and I used to do more, and I'm all in favor of making flying safer, but the number of real attacks that succeeded is very small. So the one man who was the shoe bomber, who was quite inept and didn't do very well, made us spend billions of dollars to respond to that. So I think there's a mismatch between threat and response. And in some ways, hard to define. We may be overreacting.
Part of the conversation that I don't think has been explored either is the concept that you say the shoe bomber was unsuccessful, and I agree he was within the particular episode that he tried. But if you connect it more broadly to the economic security piece that you mentioned earlier, he was actually maybe successful because he's caused us at a time where we really maybe don't have a lot of extra money to spend money in a way that may not necessarily have been our preferred priority before he tried his attack last year.
Greg, I agree completely. And a lot of people that I know about that are working on this and are trying to do better. But it's complicated. It's hard. And there aren't any simple solutions that I can think of.
Dr. Charles Hertzfeld, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation about predictions for 2011 and beyond will continue in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Lori Nelson is the Director of Financial Reporting in the Office of Audit for the Postal Service Inspector General.
OPM sets the funding requirements for the CSRS and the FERS pension plans, and the Postal Act of 2006 mandates the pre-funding for the retirees' health care. So it's really OPM that needs to change, and they've gone on record as saying they won't change unless Congress tells them to.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Dr. Brian Jacobs from Children's National Medical Center commented during the panel discussion titled Realizing the Promise of Health Information Exchange. Have we turned the corner?
So the key really is the culture change and the movement in that direction there. Both ACO and medical home thrive best in a data-rich environment, and that's why electronic health records and health information exchange are really such key, if not essential, elements to moving in that direction there.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword Booz Allen. How health information exchange will facilitate individual mission priorities while advancing a common vision of a unified health system is a constant demand. Booz Allen Hamilton's strategy and technology consultants provide diverse perspectives from across the health market to place core issues such as privacy, security, and trust in the right context to help you make informed decisions, make health information exchange possible, and improve the health and wellness of our nation. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Childhood obesity can increase risk for many health problems.
The epidemic of obesity among children and adolescents is now regarded as one of the most important public health problems in the United States.
Dr. Jill Reedy, a nutritionist with the National Cancer Institute, has published a study analyzing national diet data.
And these findings are very consistent with other research from our group here at the National Cancer Institute, as well as others, really adding another piece to the rather disturbing picture that's emerging about the nation's diet in crisis.
For more information and tips on fighting childhood obesity, visit the website wecan.nhlbi.org. health.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Predictions 2011 on the agenda, and my guest in this part of the program talking about Predictions 2011, Dr. Charles Hertzfeld. I talked to him this morning about his predictions for the coming year and his experience, based on his experience as director of ARPA and when ARPANET was established, also in the private sector and as director of defense research and engineering at the Department of Defense. And Dr. Hertzfeld really enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Hertzfeld this morning. In this part of the conversation, we were talking about the implications of his two main predictions, that of potential for economic security becoming more challenging in 2011, and also the challenge of terrorism. Longer term, do you foresee your two major trains of thought, the terrorism piece and the economic security piece, continuing to weave in together from time to time in the way that we just discussed, as with the shoe bomber?
That's one of the things I'm worried about. But let me get back to some ideas I worked on many years ago, which turned out to be successful, and one which did not. When I was at ARPA and when I was director, the most important, I made a lot of decisions. I spent a lot of money. I was involved in really important security issues like arms control and the Cold War and such. But the most significant decision I made in 1966, when I was just director, was to integrate and connect different computers and communication devices. I must say that at the time, nobody thought whether it could be done at all, but I decided we must try, and I spent relatively minimal amounts of money to do it. And what came out of that was the ARPANET and then the Internet and the web and everything we live with today that makes our lives what it is, mostly good, but some not quite so good. It was a stupendous gamble, not in terms of dollars. The dollars I put on the issues were in the millions of dollars, but not even 10 million in my time. Now, the total investment that the world made in this is billions and billions, but that was mostly private enterprise that did it. So the U.S. government, particularly NSF, had some critical roles in this. So we managed to do that, and in a sense, there was a fulfillment of a boy's dream I had. I wanted the universal library where everything could be read, it could be at hand. And we've got that now for all practical purposes. The other thing was I really wanted a magic carpet to go anywhere with a snap of the fingers. And while we don't have that, and we'll never get it quite the way the fairy tales describe it, we with online devices we can go anywhere and look at anything, look at streets, look at houses, look at people, look at what happened. And it's an extraordinary world. And that part was just hugely successful, way beyond what anyone could guess, though the guru of all of us was a fellow by the name of Licklider, whose vision we are just filling out. Now, at the same time, or shortly thereafter, I naively thought that the globalization of the economy and of politics would lead to more tranquility, peace, and happiness. And that has not happened. What has happened was an enormous economic advance, unbelievably strong for some time. But we have terrorism, we have street riots over things that are really not something anybody should be surprised at, in that governments in Europe cannot sustain the spending supporting higher education, that therefore that has to be trimmed somehow, could not possibly be a surprise to anybody who looked at the economic numbers and at the same time who understood how important education was for the whole world. So that expectation has failed, and I frankly am not sure where this will go, but it's I suppose the biggest incorrect call I made over the years.
What do some of the decisions that you made over the years, and you recounted some that were successful, some that were not, what lesson did you learn that you could share with people who are in government now? And there are some leaders in government who are starting to talk about and understand that without a willingness to take risk, there will be no innovation from government as we've seen in the past and as you experienced in your career.
I could not agree more. It's a big topic, but bureaucracy, the misuse of bureaucracy, is a good way to start. I think bureaucracy is absolutely essential, and the functioning one is a joy to behold. But one has to be very clear that bureaucracy only handles 80% or so of the real problems. And the most important ones, having to do with new stuff, has to be done outside of regular bureaucracy and occasionally against it. And the worry about failing is clearly a big issue. So I think somehow the government has to preserve, and indeed private industry has to preserve, the ability for people to have resources to spend on new ideas. And if you try and define these new ideas too narrowly, you will fail, because the beauty of invention is it's full of surprises, and some are good surprises and not all are. Some are bad stuff that can happen. But to do that, you have to have organizations that are allowed to fail. And I wrote a bit about DARPA in the 50 years history last year, the celebration of the 50 years. And one key thing was that we succeeded in some things, we failed in some things. We succeeded in helping this country run a Cold War with the American side of the arms race that did not lead to big wars. There was no nuclear war after World War II, so far, and I hope that stays that way. That was a huge success and involved a number of projects that we ran, and including such stellar programs as the system to detect nuclear explosions that people had agreed not to do. That was hugely successful, and it still exists and still working. We got involved in counterinsurgency, which was kind of related to terrorism of today. And there we failed in Vietnam and we succeeded in Thailand. We helped the Thai significantly to win the insurgency problems they had in the 60s. And we failed in Thailand for reasons that nobody could do anything about. Much bigger issues intervene, and we were kind of innocent bystanders. But we had a hand in developing the doctrine of how you fight counterinsurgency wars, and that was picked up in the context of Iraq and Afghanistan in the